Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Brett Hayes, I know you're an expert in the Supreme Court. What's hot? What's not?
Well, I think if we're talking about what's hot right now, the Supreme Court is hearing arguments on an issue that may, symbolically anyways, affect both the Obama administration and perhaps even the flavor of the upcoming elections. The arguments they're hearing is on whether the administration, the Obama administration, went too far in trying to regulate emissions from what they call stationary sources, meaning things like power plants. A little bit of background here. In 2007, there was a case the Supreme Court decided, Massachusetts versus Environmental Protection Agency. It was a 5-4 decision, and the majority said that the EPA must regulate emissions of greenhouse gases from motor vehicles if they endanger the public health. The EPA followed suit. They did some investigations, and they said, yes, these greenhouse gases coming from motor vehicles do, in fact, endanger the public health. And they said, oh, but also there is a danger from these stationary sources like power plants. The problem here with this particular move by the EPA was that it's not entirely clear that the Clean Air Act, which is the statute in question, authorizes the EPA to regulate emissions from stationary sources. In other words, this may be an unconstitutional exercise by the executive of congressional authority. Okay, so how is this potentially an electoral issue? It doesn't exactly sound like one. Well, we know that President Obama has said that he's going to go it alone if Congress doesn't act, right? That he is going to use the power of the executive as much as he can to achieve certain policy objectives, particularly for things like the environment, maybe to a lesser extent, things like immigration. This is a major source of Republican criticism of President Obama, that he is trying to kind of circumnavigate the legislative body of Congress, right? That he is trying to take on this legislative power when he has only executive power. And so this is an interesting, I'll say, test in some ways of whether, in fact, this going it alone strategy can be successful, can be held up in the courts. But also
5-4 Republican Supreme Court.
5-4. And of course, it's your favorite. Justice Kennedy was the critical vote. I say your favorite because we often talk about Justice Kennedy
Indeed. Here. Indeed. I don't think there's any question. I think that they're going to say you went too far to the president.
Well, I mean, again, interestingly, in Massachusetts versus EPA, Kennedy went the other way. He, in fact, sided with the kind of pro-regulation elements because in the Clean Air Act, it was not specific about the ways in which the EPA was to regulate these greenhouse gases coming from motor vehicles.
But it did give them the legitimacy that this one may not.
It did, but again, it was kind of an interpretive exercise,
yeah, okay.
Right? And so this is, again, another interpretive exercise. Here we're looking at, in some ways, the difference between the specific language of it and the intent, right? It's very clear that something like the Clean Air Act has the intent of having clean air. And we mm-hmm. know that these power plants are major pollutants, okay, or polluters. And so, you know, which are we going to go with? Are we going to go with the direct language? Or are we going to go with the purpose and the intent of the statute? And how the, you know, kind of the court comes down may actually be more of a function of statutory construction, statutory interpretation, rather than simple kind of left-right politics, as it was with Massachusetts versus EPA.
What else you got before the court?
Well, there are a bunch of other things before the court. Coming this next month is a case that I believe we've actually talked about in the past about religious exemptions to the Affordable Care Act and whether, in fact, certain for-profit companies have to do things like pay for birth control for their employees. This is, you may have heard, and the listeners may have heard of the Hobby Lobby being involved in this. And the Hobby Lobby has essentially said that the religious beliefs of the ownership of that company are being violated by the requirement of the Affordable Care Act.
Which is does damage to the First Amendment, right?
Yeah, that's right. They're saying basically it is violating their free exercise, right? The right to exercise their religion as they see fit, including the right not to engage in behavior that they see as violates religious tenets. So this is going before the Supreme Court in the next month, and this is also going to be quite an interesting case. I mean, it's not nearly as impactful as the last Supreme Court case on the Affordable Care Act, but this actually begins to give us a sense of whether, in fact, the court is going to allow for fairly broad conceptions. Something like the Hobby Lobby is not a a religious corporation per se. But it is, in fact, an entity owned by individuals that have religious beliefs and religious concerns. And so if, in fact, the court is willing to grant that kind of of an exception to the Hobby Lobby, others could do that. I mean, you know, some, you know, large pizza, you know, kind of national pizza chain could make a similar kind of claim that they do not want to cover certain things based on their religious beliefs. And so what you have here is an opportunity to carve out a small section out of the Affordable Care Act in a way that would deny benefits to individuals who work for those kinds of companies.
I wanted to ask you about John Dingell's retirement from the Congress. Is there anything that this signifies for us?
I don't think so. Dingell, of course, is the longest serving member in the history of the House of Representatives. It's over 60 years. And there are a number of retirements this year. I think we're now up to 20 in the House and 6 in the Senate. But that puts us right about at the average over the last basically 40 years.
And it's very important because when you get an open seat without a long-serving congressman, it's often an opportunity for the other party to pick it up.
Well, it can be. But so, for example, in Dingell's legislative district, Obama, I think, won that district by 66%, right? So the Democrats aren't going to be terribly concerned about that. But there are places, Bill Owens, right?
That's here in our North Country.
Right. That is quite a strong opportunity, I think, for the Republicans to pick up a seat in the House. And so, yeah, there are times when you know, somebody was able to hold despite the partisan demographics of the district. But I think what we're seeing, I mean, I think I've heard this narrative over the last several months that we're seeing more retirements and the like right now because of the partisan polarization, the gridlock, and the prospects for change not being terribly good in the near future. But I'm not actually sure that's what we're seeing. It seems like we're actually seeing just kind of the standard retirement cycle, and it's pretty evenly split between Democrats and Republicans, particularly in the House. A few more Democratic retirements in the Senate, but it seems like the normal pattern.
Brad Hayes is Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College, holds a PhD in Government and Politics from the University of Maryland. And Brad, we always love it when you're here. You're terrific.
Thanks for having me on, Alan.